So let's review. Zok the Mishnah, a kaisim nechasl v'banav, if someone writes over his property to his sons, as the Rashbam explains, writes a lichtav lehem nechasl v'lachar maisai el l'shayechol peiris b'chayev. He wants to give them the property now to preclude any future liens, but he also wants to retain the rights to its produce until his death. There's a machlaikis. Tzarech sheyichtav mayem l'achar misa di Rabbi Yehuda. Yehuda says that he must specify that the gift is effective from today and after my death. And as the Gemara explains, hachi kamalei, gufa konei mayayim peir l'achar misa. The actual property is acquired by the sons immediately, but the right to its produce is only acquired upon his death. However, as Rashbam explains, b'loi mahayoyim lo nasin klum de'imatan l'achar misa. If he does not specify mahayoyim, the gift is void because one cannot transfer his property effective after his death. The Mishnah continues, however, Rabbi Yisi says that it is not necessary to add mahayoyim, because as the Brice explains, zman nishal shtar mechiyich alav. The date on the document indicates that it is to be effective immediately. Otherwise, the date is useless. Clearly, he wanted the document to take effect from this date. The Gemara cites Rav's ruling, Halacha Krabi Yitzi. The Gemara cites Machlekes regarding Hakna, whether Rabbi Yehuda also requires Mahayim in a document that records a transfer of property with a kinyan. Rav Nachman ruled, B'Hakna in a tzarch. This is not necessary, since the kinyan was not performed with the shtar, but through a different kinyan, which is assumed to be effective immediately. And Rav Huna Bered of Yeshua added, B'duchrin piskame dahava banpan pligi. The machlekes is only in the case where the document merely records the transfer of property without mentioning the kinyan. Therefore, Yehuda does require it to state mahayim, because there is no indication of when it took place. However, Rav Papi ruled, Ika aknisa de tzarch v'ika aknisa de lay tzarch. Sometimes the document requires mahayim, and sometimes it does not. And he differentiated as follows. Akne v'kanina minei lay tzarch. If it first describes the owner's instructions to transfer the property and then describes that the witnesses indeed perform the kinyan, it does not require mahayim because kinyan yaseiru hu yipukayach. The extra expression reinforces the kinyan and conveys that it is effective immediately even without mahayim. However, kinyan minei v'akne yaitzarch, if it first states that the kinyan was done and then describes the instruction, it does require mahayim because perusha kumafarsh. The document merely explains that they performed the kinyan upon his instructions. Therefore, there is no superfluous expression of kinyan, and he must add mahayim. Mishnah continues, "Akaisim nechasav lebnoi la'achar maisa." If someone writes over his property to his son, and as the Gemara explained, "Gufu kone mahayim per la'achar misa," the actual property is acquired by the son immediately, but the rights to his produce is retained by the father until his death. Therefore, ha'ave neyachal limkar b'mneishin k'subin leben. The father cannot sell the property completely because the son owns the guf, the property itself. The son cannot sell the property completely either, since the father still owns the peiros, the rights to the produce. Therefore, machar ha'av mechur machayomus. If the father sold the property, the buyer acquires only the right to the peiros and only until the father's death. Machar ha'ben ein lekech ben klum achayomus ha'av. If the son sold the property, the buyer acquires nothing until the father's death. And upon the father's death, the buyer will acquire the property completely if the son is still alive at that time. However, the Gemara explains, Machar haben b'chaya av, umeis haben b'chaya av. If the son sold the property and he then died in his father's lifetime, there's a machlekes. Amr b'yechanan, loy kan lekech, the sale is not effective. And reshlakash amr kan lekech, the sale is effective. The Gemara explains, b'yechanan amr loykan lekech, the sale is not effective because kinyan peiros kikin haguftami. The right to the produce is the primary ownership in the property. Therefore, the son is only able to sell his rights conditional upon his acquiring them. Since he died before his father, the Rashbam explains, Silik nafshi mishas mechira v'yachzu l'yir shehav. By selling the property, he forfeits his rights to inherit it, and he never actually acquired the property. Therefore, the buyer cannot acquire it, and the father's heirs inherit the property. However, Rish Lakish ha-mekan l'kech, the sale is effective because kinyan peiros lav k'kinyan guftami. The right to the produce is not the primary ownership in the property. Therefore, the buyer acquired the guf immediately, but he can only benefit from the peiros after the father dies. The Gemara cites another scenario involving this machlekes regarding bikurim. One who brings bikurim, the first fruit, recites the psukim in Parshas Kisavi, including the phrase Va'ati hine evesis reishis pri adama asher nesata li Hashem, referring to the land Hashem gave him. Now, hamoicher sedeu l'peiros, if someone sold the rights to the produce of a field, Rabbi Yechanan Amar maybe v'kairi. The buyer brings bikurim and also recites the relevant parasha, including this phrase, because kinyan peiros kikinyan guftami. And so he can rightfully say ha'adam asher nesata li, because he is considered the primary owner of the land. However, the buyer brings Bikurim, but he cannot recite the parasha because Kenyan Paris lavke Kenyan Gufdami, and so he cannot say Ha'adamash Nesatli because he is not considered the primary owner of the land. The Gemara asks, why do Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish need to dispute both of these cases? We would understand one from the other. The Gemara offers two differences. We might have thought that when a father sells the guf to his son, although he retains the peiros, he wants his son to have primary ownership because he does not want his rights to limit the son's rights at all. If so, perhaps in this particular case, Rabbi Yochanan agrees that kenyan peiros lavke kenyan guf. And only regarding Bikurim or elsewhere does he hold kenyan peiros ke kenyan guf. Therefore, he had to teach us that even here he holds kenyan peiros ke kenyan guf. And the Rashbam adds, perhaps Rish Lakish holds kenyan peiros lav ke kenyan guf, only in this case, but regarding Bikurim or elsewhere he agrees that kenyan peiros ke kenyan guf. Therefore, he had to teach us that even regarding Bikurim he holds kenyan peiros lav ke kenyan guf. We might have thought that when one sells the guf but retains the peiros, he certainly wants to retain primary ownership, even if his son is the buyer of the guf. If so, perhaps in this particular case, Rish Lakish agrees that kenyan peiros ke kenyan guf. And only regarding Bikurim or elsewhere where he sells the peiros but retains the guf, does he hold kenyan peiros lav ke kenyan guf. Therefore, he had to teach us that even here he holds kenyan peiros lav ke kenyan guf. And Rashbam adds, perhaps Rabbi Yechon holds kenyan peiros ke kenyan guf only in this case, but regarding Bikurim or elsewhere he agrees that kenyan peiros lav ke kenyan guf. Therefore, he had to teach us that even regarding Bikurim he holds kenyan peiros ke kenyan guf. David the Gemara needs to tell us that their machlekes applies in both cases. The Gemara cites two contradictory brises regarding this machlekes. Nichse loch, v'acharecha yirish pleini, v'acharev yirish pleini. Someone said, my property is bequeathed to you, and afterwards to another, and after him to yet another. When the first recipient dies, the second person gets the property. And when the second person then dies, the third person gets the property. They do not leave this property to their heirs. However, if the second person dies in the first person's lifetime, there's a machlekes of two brises. One brisa says, because the third person only has the rights to inherit the property from the second recipient. Therefore, since the third person does not receive the property, it reverts to the first recipient's heirs, even though he only had the peiros. Apparently, because kenyan peiros ke kenyan guf, the first recipient's rights to the peiros is the primary ownership. And since the original owner ceded his rights to the guf, and the third person cannot get it because the second person never got it, the first recipient is now the full owner of the property. However, a second brisa rules, Yachzeru l'yerushei noisin. The property reverts to the original owner's heirs because kenyan peiros lav ke kenyan guf. Therefore, the first recipient has no rights to the guf and it remains with the original owner's heirs. Apparently, these brises disagree in the same machlekes Rabbi Yochanan Rish Lakish with the kenyan peiros ke kenyan guf or kenyan peiros lav ke kenyan guf. However, the Gemara proceeds to explain these brises according to both Rish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan. Rish Lakish says that both brises agree with his opinion that kenyan peiros lav ke kenyan guf. However, their machlekes is in whether acharecha is an exception. The first brisa holds acharecha shani. Since he gave it to several people successively, he intends to give them each the property completely, even the guf, but with the condition that it passes on. Therefore, since the third person does not get it, it remains with the first recipient. However, the second brisa does not make this distinction, and even in the case of acharecha, the first recipient gets only peiros. Therefore, since the third person does not get it, it reverts to the original owner's heirs and not to the first recipient's heirs, because kenyan peiros lav ke kenyan guf. However, Biechen explains, Tanoihi, it is indeed a machlekes. The first brisa holds kenyan peiros ke kenyan guf dami. The second brisa holds kenyan peiros lav ke kenyan guf dami. And Biechen rules like the first brisa.